The following is Russ Unger's talk, researching with a team that's new to research from UX Thursday Chicago. UX Thursday is brought to you by UIE and Vitamin T. For more information and for future UX Thursday events, visit uxthursday.com. That's uxthursday.com.
So, how many of you haven't done research ever? Hands? You've all done research before? Come on, be honest. How many of you worked with people who have never done research? Yeah. How'd that go? Also, so when I started at GE Capital, I was hired to do this really big project in which, well, there's a lot of research involved. And my team consisted of, I think there's probably five or six of us on the team right now for this project. And of that team at that point in time, I think one of us had done research. That was me. So that was kind of a challenge. They're all smart people, so I didn't have any doubts in their ability to be able to do this. But what I wanted to figure out was, what's the best way to get them up to speed, or what's the best way to get them kind of in tune with how we do research? And I started thinking about what are kind of all of these popular research methods, either that we're all doing to some degree or that we would be doing on the project that we had in place. And when I started thinking about that, I wanted to see kind of what I could identify as patterns, or what was the overlap in all of these methods. And this came down to two different things. And the two things that I found out that was that all of these involve talking and listening. Pretty important stuff. Do we all know how to talk? Listen? Raise our hands? Awesome. I just meant if you knew how to raise your hands. But which one of these things is most important when it comes to research? I really kind of had to chew on this because it's kind of, again, it's obvious, right? Well, that's not obvious, but isn't that the ugliest dang chicken you've ever seen? My wife made me Google other images to make sure it wasn't a turkey or some, anyway. So which one of these should I focus on first? And one of the things that I thought about is we've got two ears. So listening should be the easiest thing to do, right? In theory, that's right. But it also occurred to me that listening is so important, maybe we should be able to ask good questions. We've got to be able to ask people questions. We've got to be able to set them up to give us the opportunity to listen. So I'm going to focus, for the most part, on question asking as one of the things that was most important for me to get my team up to speed. At the core of question asking, there are really just two types of questions. Any guesses? The guys who saw this the other night don't get to guess. Open and closed. It's that simple when you get down to question asking. And let's kind of get to know them a little bit. So first question, Stephen, who's going to be talking at the end of the day. Do you like cheese, Stephen? Yes. So the answer to that is yes, right? Unless you've got a talker on your hands, like Stephen, who said, I like cheese, you're going to get a simple response to this. You're going to get something like yes, no. So you're going to get short answers, not a lot of information, and it's kind of more work for you as the person who's asking the question. Do you like cheese? What else can you ask him? What else do you need to get to know? Now, don't take this as all short-answered questions or binary questions are bad to ask. They're not. But really, when you want to get somebody to talk and have a conversation with you, that's not where you want to start. Instead, you want to start with something like an open question. Stephen, why do you like cheese? So what Stephen said to me was he likes the textures, the flavors, the variety. Oh, I'm sorry, keep going, please. This is what happens when you know other people. They will do that. But additional information, what you're going to learn from things like open questions are longer answers. You're going to get detailed answers. Stephen said texture. You said different flavors, textures. What else you got? Mixing of combinations, right? Stephen is a big cheese aficionado. When he travels, he likes to go to places and then has to take hundreds of dollars of cheese back home with him on the plane. But this also gives you the potential to ask all kinds of different questions. Understanding why Stephen likes cheese is much more qualitative information. And in some cases, you're going to learn things that you didn't even know were important to understanding why Stephen likes cheese. So I talked about open and closed questions. We got a bonus round for you. There's also these questions that I like to call continuation questions. Stephen, you mentioned texture. What do you like about the texture of cheese? So apparently extra aged Gouda has crystals in it. Like, is that like that gum? The flavor crystals? Gouda crystals? Okay, so in a perfect world, Stephen, you know, would have kind of talked about maybe the difference between Velveeta and blue cheese. Velveeta is not a cheese. We had this conversation. It's a chemical. But having heard the word texture, I get to ask him more questions. Why do you like texture? Maybe I hadn't considered that. How do I keep this conversation going? They also let me rebound. In the event that I had started out with, Stephen, do you like cheese? And he said, yes. I could say, well, what is it that you like about cheese? Tell me more about what you feel about cheese. And continuation questions don't also have to be questions. It can be as simple as, what else? Or tell me more. You can get into an and then territory where you are talking to people and you're learning more than kind of what you set out to do. Now, you should be a little aware, there's a problem with kind of continuation questions that you can get lost. When I start talking to people, I start to love hearing things, and I'll start to relate to my own life, get a little crazy sometimes where I go, so tell me more about this, or, oh, how'd you use Instant Messenger to do this thing? I never thought of that. I can get off track. You can also kind of get into a dangerous territory where, and dangerous is a strong word, but you can get to an uncomfortable territory where people don't necessarily want to answer. So you have to be sensitive and make sure you stay in line with the goals that you have for your research or your questions. But otherwise, you can kind of get people into a slightly different, kind of more uncomfortable scenario. So the ability to ask questions is really great, great power that you have in your hands. And with great power comes what? Thanks, nerds. So good research questions, these are really important. We understand open and closed, but there's also kind of a makeup to what makes a good research question. They're explicit to a person's experience. So what I mean is, if I'm talking to somebody about an application for renting movies, do you think that this is a good application for renting movies? Not very explicit. This is something that is, you know, yeah, I guess. But if I say, how would you rent a movie that you wanted to watch tonight using this application? Very explicit to their experience. They don't guide somebody toward an answer. This is kind of one of those 101 things that happens. If you said something to the effect of, would this movie rental app be better if we had a mobile option? What do you think they're going to say? Of course they're going to say yes. Now, this is great if you're trying to sell a project to the company and you want to prove your research says that, that's not what we're about. We're about getting good, detailed answers. A better question is going to be, you know, is there any other way that you might use this movie rental application? Talked a little bit about yes, no, and true, false. We want to avoid binary questions when possible. They're just limiting. They're flat. You can avoid these as much as you can, but don't be afraid of them. I'm the first one who will say, you know, would you use this app? Yes, great. How else would you use this? You have to make sure that you can use these as a recovery mechanism. And finally, aim for a conversation, but not a specific answer. If you've ever watched Oprah or Ellen, Oprah, when I think back, she said to Tom Cruise, so what's up? And he got all crazy. I'm in love, jumping up and down. She didn't even ask him anything about Katie or that love life. Ellen can ask a question to Neil Patrick Harris. So you have kids. And he'll go into a 20-minute, you know, love infest about his children, how great his twins are. And I watch a lot of daytime TV. But there's also one other thing they let you do. They let you shut up and listen. That's one of the biggest things you can do. It's really easy to get caught up in asking questions and having a set of goals that you want to get answered, that you keep pressing for those instead of just sitting back and listening. One of my favorite questions is to ask somebody their name, ask them what their job is, and ask them what they do for their company. That can be a 20-minute, 30-minute conversation that comes from them. I've seen this happen from when I was a newbie until, you know, watching people have been doing it for 20 or 30 years. All right, so talking about questions to me is pretty fun, but one of the best ways that I know, and one of the best ways that I got my team,